Thank you for joining us for Oppenheimer's Practical Perspective Investment Series. To help put the current market volatility in proper context for our clients, we've launched this audio series to highlight how our key investment partners and some of Wall Street's most experienced investment managers are responding to the recent market events. I'm your host, Peter Catteray, Head of Sales and Marketing for Oppenheimer Asset Management. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by one of our longstanding investment partners, Raul Sharma of Schaefer Cullen Capital Management. Raul is the portfolio manager of Schaefer Cullen's Global High Dividend ADR portfolio and the International High Dividend and Emerging Market High Dividend portfolios. Raul's been in the investment industry for over 20 years and sits on the executive committee of Schaefer Cullen. Raul, thank you very much for joining us. First quarter of 2022 has really been dominated by the news in Europe of a war in Ukraine, obviously, and the economic impacts of sanctions. But the market seems to have been holding up relatively well despite this difficult news. So let's start from a high level and get your sort of general perspective on where we are in the market cycle and where we are in the face of this current volatility.
Sure. Well, I think the war in Ukraine, I would kind of summarize as having really three impacts, or you could kind of summarize it with three points. You know, the first thing we had to do is to figure out, you know, what exposure do our companies have? And that's pretty straightforward. You could see what their revenue and earnings exposure is. You could see if they have any assets in Russia. And if you write that down as zero, you know, you could understand what the impact is. We didn't have a lot of exposure. We had less than 1% of our revenues were exposed and less than 1% of our assets. And in light of the fact that stocks, you know, dropped at first, you know, between 10 and 15%, I would say that was, you know, already discounted, you know, whatever lost revenues there were in Russia. But then the second harder to grasp sort of impact is the cost inflation. And of course, inflation was already out of control entering this period. And it's a highly inflationary event, we think. I don't think I could think of another country that if you started not buying their exports or started sanctioning that would have a more of an inflationary impact than Russia. I don't know, maybe Saudi Arabia, or maybe if the U.S. was somehow sanctioned, that could have a similar impact. But, you know, Russia really does supply a large amount of commodities, and they also tend to have very, very high quality commodities. So you're kind of taking out some of the lowest cost, highest quality commodity supply out of the supply chains, or at least reducing that. And, you know, we're obviously speaking to all of our companies, and no one really knows what the impact of this is going to be yet. There's a lot of uncertainty about it. You know, that has prompted us to kind of, you know, make a modest shift in our exposures by kind of reducing exposure to companies that we thought were more vulnerable to those first two points. One, if they tended to have a bit more exposure to Russia, or because we didn't have much of that, if they tend to be more vulnerable to cost inflation. And that does mean kind of European companies in more cyclical sectors, areas like consumer discretionary, industrials. So you've seen us take that exposure down a little bit. And because we do think we're in an environment for stagflation at this point, we wanted to kind of position a portfolio for that sort of environment by taking up positions in companies that tend to have really good pricing power in an inflationary environment that could still do well in this environment. And so that meant taking up exposures in certain types of consumer staple companies, healthcare companies, pharmaceutical companies, which were quite cheap to begin with. We've added to our energy exposure, and we've added to our materials exposure as well. And I think that positions the portfolio quite well for the environment. And even that more cyclical stuff that we still have positions in Europe that we took down a little bit, at some point that's going to be very, very interesting too. Because the valuations are attractive as they are, the big uncertainty is things going to get worse with the war? And by worse, I mean, is there going to be some sort of nuclear event? Is Russia going to decide to enter other countries? Or might additional sanctions come on, the big one being gas or oil? That could cause even more cost inflation. So, but, you know, I think these things, if you look throughout history, these things do tend to kind of resolve themselves in some way. And from that point, these sorts of impacted investments tend to do very well going forward. So we're still optimistic over the long term about that exposure as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the potential spillover effect of that sort of inflationary catalyst of what you talked about in terms of Russia and their contribution to the commodities markets. Many have described the environment as sort of transitory for inflation. Others believe it's a longer haul for inflation. What are your thoughts in terms of the duration of the inflationary environment and when we can start seeing light at the end of that tunnel?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go away soon. I think you know, maybe if we're lucky, looking a year out, you might start seeing things subside, you know, kind of meaningfully. You know, maybe in the second half, it could get a little bit better as well. But for the meantime, in light of the fact that there's so many aspects to this that are being further exacerbated. So, you know, we already had a lot of supply chain issues going on, you know, globally. And, you know, we were already seeing companies setting up dual supply chains as China wants to have their own supply chains and the U.S. wants to have their own. That in itself is very inflationary. Now you add a third thing with all the supply chain disruptions that are coming because of the sanctions or because, you know, ports are being blocked or, you know, people are not flying over Russia and that sort of thing. So that just kind of makes it, I think, last longer. And I think that we will be in a structurally, and even if it does get better, I think we're going to be in a structurally higher environment for inflation that we've seen certainly compared to the last, you know, 10 years. For many years to come. And so that makes kind of the value of what we do that much better, we think, because then, you know, if you're trying to figure out how you can preserve your income in an inflationary environment, well, we would suggest that investing in high yielding stocks that have good dividend growth potential has got to be one of the best ways to do that.
So let's narrow our focus down to that subset of those high quality, strong free cash flow, high dividend businesses. So talk for just a minute about how those businesses are faring, what the stability of the dividends look like, and how they're weathering this sort of difficult environment.
Yeah, with these, I mean, the good news was, is even the companies that were more vulnerable to cost inflation, many of those companies have already paid their dividends or announced their dividends. And we were seeing good growth in the dividends this year. And that was after our best year for dividend growth in history, where last year we had, you know, close to 20% per annum dividend growth, and the portfolio income level succeeded pre-COVID levels by the end of the year. And then this year, to start again, as I mentioned, because a lot of companies had already announced their dividends and had good years last year, we're also seeing dividend growth. We're coming in at around 10% this year. So that's quite robust, still off of a high yield of around, you know, 4.8%. And I think now, to the extent, you know, some companies might be a little bit more vulnerable, you know, like I said, we've kind of managed that. We've kind of taken that exposure a little bit down. And then we have these, we've taken our exposure up in places where we don't think there's really any risk to the growth, where these companies have had a lot of experience managing environments of high inflation and tend to have, you know, non-cyclical businesses that have, you know, products that people just need and have always historically commanded pricing pressure. So, and then in certain areas, you might even get upside to dividends from what we saw in the beginning of the year, certainly in places like energy or
so even the commodities. So let's sort of make a comparison. So the high dividend side, or the dividend side rather, is one component, but then there's also the valuation discussion of the international markets compared to the U.S. and others. So let's take a look and maybe walk us through where are we in the valuation comparison, you know, in the international versus the U.S. market, and where are we in the dividend yield comparison between those two markets?
Yeah, I mean, we're still, you know, at historical extremes. I mean, our portfolio is trading at close to a 40% discount to the S&P 500, and that's probably a conservative estimate. You know, we're at about a 15% discount to IFA, which is also near kind of a historical extreme. So the valuations are very attractive. We're, you know, probably bottom quartile relative to history in terms of where our PE is. And the same with the yield. The yield is, you know, our dividend yield is close to triple that of the S&P 500. And, you know, we're about 70% higher than MSCI IFA. And then as I said, the growth is very strong in terms of the dividend growth. I mean, that might slow a little bit going forward, but still, I think it'll be pretty good. And you know, even though rates have gone up, I still think the gap you get in yield and just not having the risk of losing as much in bonds like we're seeing happen this year makes the kind of income attributes of the strategy really important at a time when people are really going to need it in light of the environment for inflation that we're in.
Absolutely. And I think that's a conversation we're having on a regular basis about where you can achieve that consistent income in this low yield environment. So I think that's very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the opportunity set created on the back of this volatility, right? So clearly there is, you know, the world is paying attention to what's going on in Ukraine. There are concerns about the supply chain and energy disruptions, but that's creating quite an opportunity from a number of different perspectives. We touched on valuation, but what do you see as the sort of key themes and key opportunities as we look out to 2022 and 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like, you know, COVID kind of accelerated, you know, some of the kind of the mega trends that we're seeing, you know, things like climate change and that sort of thing, trying to, you know, address these, you know, sorts of issues. I think you're going to see the same thing come out of war. In the short term, it looks like climate change related problems are getting worse because, you know, people are having to use more, you know, fossil fuels, and, you know, God knows there's so much destruction going on, and, you know, carbon being emitted everywhere, you know, due to the war. And I think that what you see happens is two things. I think when, you know, as economies try to bail themselves out of, you know, what could be close to a recessionary environment, if that were to occur, I think that you're going to see that spending going towards these climate change initiatives. And then I think there's going to be even a greater need to do it in light of the fact that we're probably taking a step back over the short term in terms of the goals of countries to reduce carbon emissions. And that tends to be a good thing for, we think, particularly for European countries and companies in the Nordic region as well, who tend to be way ahead in addressing these issues. So they're kind of the leaders in providing the products and services to address climate change needs. So I think that is going to be, we already have very good exposure to that within our portfolio. I think that you're going to see that even become a bigger opportunity because of the war.
So broadly speaking, you mentioned the climate side of it, but if we dig in a little bit further, just the broad ESG theme seems to obviously be much more developed in Europe and in the international markets perhaps than the US. So how relevant are those kind of ESG conversations when you're sitting in the boardroom with one of the companies that you guys invest in? And is it a key part of the conversation you're having with companies in Europe?
It is. We don't have an ESG mandate per se, but ESG has been something we've always kind of cared about. You know, maybe initially 10 years ago, it was more kind of on the G side, but then it's become more on the ENS side. And, you know, so we've done a lot of work as a firm to kind of get our hands around this whole issue. And, you know, we even are now running ESG mandates at Schaefer Cohen. We think we have really good experience in doing this. We use MSCI's ESG research product to help us kind of get a framework on some of the issues. And when we are talking to companies, yeah, we are bringing up these issues and asking them, what are they going to do to improve themselves in a certain way? Because we do think that companies with better ESG will command better multiples. And so that's important. And then that's one aspect. Then the more exciting side, frankly, from my perspective, is thinking about the companies that are, you know, like I said, selling the products and services to address climate change concerns. So that I just think is a huge mega decade theme, and those companies I think are going to grow a lot faster. And so so this correction has provided a great opportunity to have exposure to some of these companies that are, you know, kind of going down, even though they still have this long term opportunity in front of them.
So, Raul, to wrap up our conversation, obviously we talked about the valuation gap between the international markets and the U.S. and obviously, the very strong cash flow and dividend yield characteristics. I think one of the key questions on the mind of our investors is, what's the catalyst to kind of close that gap in valuation? What's the catalyst for the next few years to spark the international markets to really get back to the top of the, you know, the top of the performance chart? So what do you see as that catalyst? And what do you see as sort of the time frame an investor should have in mind for that type of investment?
Yeah, well, I think just as, the war kind of is turbocharging, you know, the climate change, you know, trend, we think. I think the same is true for the other big thing that was going on, which was higher inflation and higher interest rates. That, because this event is so inflationary, that even makes, causes more of a need for, you know, countries to start raising rates. And many, are obviously starting to do that, and people keep expecting them to do more. So that just tends to be a very good thing for value and for international. International value has always performed very, very well in inflationary and high interest rate environments. And it's just because if you look at the indices or like our exposure, we just have a lot more exposure to sectors that benefit from higher rates and inflation, whether it be commodities, financials, you know, energy, things like healthcare that are more resilient in that sort of environment, compared to, say, the S&P 500 that is, you know, loaded up in with tech stocks that tend to really get hit hard. Like today when we start, you know, going up, and they have much less exposures to those areas where that benefit from inflation. So, right now, you know, the war is kind of the focus. Hopefully it'll resolve or end. And that certainly could be a short-term catalyst, but that longer-term catalyst, and again, is just a structurally higher environment for rates and inflation, which tends to benefit international and value a lot. So, it was very promising before the war started. That's exactly what was happening. We were seeing international value, you know, really massively outperform. International started to outperform the U.S. Then, because the war is closest to a large exposure in the international indices, namely Europe, you saw that give back. But I just think that's kind of a temporary blip. And again, as you get a resolution to the war at some point, and then that structurally different environment, that should be a real big tailwind for international value.
Excellent. Well, Raul, I appreciate you jumping on with us today. I appreciate you walking through your views on the international landscape, where we are in valuation, and what you see as the opportunity set going forward. So thanks very much for sharing your insight, and we appreciate you being on with us today.
Sure. Anytime, Pete. Have a great day, everyone.
You too. Thank you.